भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं धीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। श्रीमद् भागवतम सेकेंड कैंटो चैप्टर वन द फर्स्ट स्टेप इन गॉड रियलाइजेशन पेज 3 Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, or in the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. Purport. The present human civilization is primarily based on the principles of sleeping and sex indulgence at night, and earning money in the day and spending the same for family maintenance. Such a form of human civilization is condemned by the Bhagavad school. Because human life is a combination of matter and spirit soul, the whole process of Vedic knowledge is directed at liberating the spirit soul from the contamination of matter. The knowledge concerning this is called Atmatattva. Those men who are too materialistic are unaware of this knowledge and are more inclined to economic development for material enjoyment. Such materialistic men are called karmis or fruitive laborers, and their allowed regulated economic development or association of women for sex indulgence. Those who are above the karmis, that is, the jnanis, yogis and devotees, are strictly prohibited from sex indulgence. The karmis are more or less devoid of atma-tattva knowledge, and as such, their life is spent without spiritual profit. The human life is not meant for hard labor for economic development, nor is it meant for sex indulgence like that of dogs and hogs. It is specifically meant for making a solution to the problems of material life and the miseries thereof. So the karmis waste their valuable human life by sleeping and sex indulgence at night and by laboring hard in the daytime to accumulate wealth. And after doing so, they try to improve the standard of materialistic life. The materialistic way of life is described herein in a nutshell. And how foolishly men waste their boon of human life is described as follows. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manohishtham Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadukamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shadrajatam Shahagana Raghunathan Nitam Tvam Shadivam Shadvaitam Shabudhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhalnitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanto Radha Kanto Namastute Tapto Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranammami Hari Priye Bancha Kalpataru Bhascha Kripashin Rupaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanipho Vaishnavipho Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Nidraya Hriyate Naktam Vyavaye Nachavavaya Diva Charthi Haya Rajan Kutumba Bharane Nama. So the materialistic life of a Griha Medhi has been summarized here. These are the activities that the materialistic people are always involved in, or their life actually centers around these activities. Nidraya hriyate naktam vyavaye na cha vavaya. Their nights are squandered in sleep, nidraya, or ba, or vyavayana, by, or in indulgence in sex life. Then at night they have only two activities, either to sleep or they have sex, or they indulge in activities relative to that. And divacharthe haya rajam, and their days are also wasted in earning money or maintaining their family. So this is how the materialistic people are always wasting their valuable time. Bayaha means the duration of life. Everybody has a specific longevity. Everyone has a specific duration. Prabhupada mentioned that everybody actually is destined to live for 100 years. That means everyone has 100 years to live. But when people become engaged in sinful activities, then as a result of the sinful activities, their ayu, or duration of life, is reduced. We see that not many people nowadays are living for a very, very long time. No one, hardly anyone actually survives 100 years, lives for 100 years. And we have to understand that as people become engaged in sinful activities, not only in this life, maybe as a result of the sinful activities from the previous lives, their lifespan is reduced. In Mahabharata it has been mentioned that the Pandavas' ayu, the Kauravas' ayu, or duration of life, was reduced considerably when they insulted Draupadi in an assembly. Just one action, one sinful activity, reduced their life considerably. And as a result of that, they lost their lives in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Whoever supported them also became involved in that sinful activity, and they lost their lives. So people, due to their sinful activities, lose the duration of their life or longevity. And also, whatever little life they have, most of the time is just wasted. Actually, for a materialistic person, their entire life is wasted. The activities pertaining to eating, sleeping, mating and defending is just a waste of time. It's simply to maintain this body, simply to arrange for the spirit soul to remain in this body, eating and sleeping, and mating and defending are the basic physical activities for a living entity. And but a devotee or a person who is spiritually inclined, he would not squander his time and energy in these activities. Although apparently it seems that the devotees are also eating, devotees are also sleeping. But those activities of a devotee have two functions or two purposes. One is to utilize the propensities for spiritual advancement. Like, as long as we have this body, we have to maintain this body. As long as we have this body, we have to nourish this body. We have to eat. So a devotee eats Krishna prasad. He needs to eat. Everybody must eat in the material platform. Otherwise, he won't be able to. He won't be able to keep his body and soul together. The soul will leave the body. If the body is not properly nourished, if the body doesn't have the food, the body won't be able to function, and the body won't be, the spirit soul won't, finally won't be able to remain in this body. So eating is a must for a living entity in the material platform. But a devotee eats Krishna prasad. And this Krishna prasad is not ordinary food. Krishna prasad is the mercy of Krishna. And Krishna, honoring Krishna prasad, eating, devotees don't actually eat Krishna prasad. Devotees honor Krishna prasad. Honoring means accepting the mercy of Krishna with the understanding that Krishna actually gave this foodstuff to us to become purified from all our sinful activities, at the same time to maintain our bodies. Krishna bala dayamoy kuribare jiv bhajay. Krishna is very merciful, bala dayamoy, and kuribare jiv bhajay, in order to conquer our tongue, which is the worst of all our senses. Of our five senses, eyes, ears, nose, touch and tongue, tongue is most, not only most avaricious, but tongue is the most difficult one to conquer or to subdue. We can close our eyes and we can stop our the activities of our eyes. We can plug our ears and so on and so forth. But tongue becomes practically impossible, especially when a person is hungry, and it is impossible to control the tongue. A man can remain blindfolded for many days. A man can plug his ears for days together. Man can abstain from smelling. A man can abstain from touching. But the tongue is practically impossible to. You try not to provide the tongue with the food. 1 day, 2 days, maximum 3 days. And the more you deprive the tongue of the objects of its sense gratification, the more avaricious the tongue becomes. So tongue is the most important of all our senses. And not only that, the tongue itself is constantly craving for material enjoyment, but tongue is connected to two other organs of the body, two other working senses, and they are belly and genitals. The way our tongue acts, accordingly our belly and genital will act. The tongue actually becomes motivated by belly. When the belly is hungry, the tongue goes completely berserk. The tongue becomes absolutely impossible to control. And as one eats, accordingly, he will develop his desire for sex life. A person who eats in the mode of passion and ignorance will not be able to control his sex desires. Therefore, it has been always prescribed, not only in the Vedas, but in all scriptures, that the people who aspire for spiritual development must take pure foodstuff. That means must take food that are in the mode of goodness. Because what we eat, our consciousness becomes affected by the food. When we eat foodstuff in the mode of goodness means knowledge. Goodness actually is synonymous to knowledge. Passion is synonymous to enjoyment, and ignorance is synonymous to, ignorance is synonymous to sleep, unconsciousness. Unconsciousness, then conscious of this material nature and thereby indulgence in material nature for enjoyment, and becoming situated in proper consciousness and becoming aware of the actual nature of this material reality. So a person who wants to make spiritual advancement must realize where he is and how he must act. Therefore, the food in mode of goodness is absolutely essential for a spiritually aspirant, for a person aspiring for spiritual life. And prasad is actually transcendental even to the mode of material goodness. Material goodness is called mixed goodness. It is mixed with passion and ignorance of the material nature. There is no pure goodness in the material nature. There is certain degree of, certain degree of influence of passion and ignorance is bound to be there in the material goodness. But when that goodness, when one transcends the material nature completely, when one becomes completely free from the influence of mode of passion and ignorance, one becomes situated in pure goodness or Suddha Sattva. Now Krishna Prasad is actually transcendental foodstuff or in pure goodness. It doesn't have any influence of passion and ignorance in it anymore. Krishna Prasad, just because of the prasad being offered to Krishna, and just because of Krishna accepting the prasad becomes completely free from the influence of passion and ignorance, and it is in the mode of Suddha Sattva, or pure goodness, or transcendental goodness. The spiritual nature is transcendental. The spiritual nature is actually in goodness. And that is the real goodness. But the material nature is passion. Passion means birth. Material nature, everyone in the material nature entered into the material nature through the process of birth. And birth is a result of raja. Raja, the Sanskrit for mode of passion, literally means birth. So everyone who is born in this material nature is influenced by the mode of passion. And when one, due to his very acute involvement in the material nature, loses his consciousness, that is the mode of ignorance. So to go back to the main point, that it's not that the devotees or people, those who aspire for spiritual life, must completely abstain from these apparently material activities, or not apparently, but material activities of eating, sleeping, etc. But the devotee, a spiritualist, transforms that. Jai Shri Shri Gaunitai, Jai Shri Shri Srinath Krishna. A devotee simply transforms those activities into spiritual activities. The material nature is a reflection of the spiritual nature. So whatever activities are there in the material nature must be there in the spiritual nature also. Whatever is there in the reflection must be there in reality. If in reality it was not there, then how can it exist in the reflection? So devotees know that this material nature is a reflection of the spiritual nature, and the activities in the material nature are reflection of spiritual activities in the spiritual nature, and whatever is there in the material nature is existing in its true sense, in its real reality, in the spiritual nature. So these activities, the eating, sleeping, mating and defending, have their spiritual counterpart, and that is eating. One must eat to Krishna prasad to generate the energy and become free from the material contamination. And similarly, devotees also sleep, but they sleep to revitalize their bodies, to further engage them in Krishna's service. Of course, in spiritual nature, there is no question of revitalizing, because there everything is absolutely vital. Everything is absolutely alive. So there is no question of becoming tired or becoming unconscious in the spiritual nature. Everyone is absolutely conscious. But in the spiritual nature, one sleeps as a result of yoga maya. He is transferred into another plane to experience Krishna's pastimes. That is how devotees sleep. Like, they become unconscious of the surrounding reality and they are transported into another reality, which is called yoga nidra. About mating, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that when duly married husband and wife unite to produce Krishna conscious children, that is dharma, that is religious person. And defending, devotees who are not at all concerned about their individual welfare, for them there is no need for defending. But they defend the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees. The devotees are ready to sacrifice their lives for the sake of defending the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vedic civilization, in the Vedic culture, in the history of the Vedic civilization, there are many such instances where devotees of the Lord sacrifice their lives in order to defend the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they don't defend themselves, but they defend the Supreme Lord and His devotees. Now that is, although apparently it may seem that the devotees are also indulging in these mundane activities, But devotees' activities are not mundane. Devotees' activities have become spiritualized because whatever they're doing is for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, there are two different expressions. One is Grihamedhinam, of the Grihamedhis, and the Grihasthas, those who are situated at home but whose consciousness is fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. They are the Grihasthas. But those who are leading their lives simply for the sake of maintaining their household and everything connected to their household is Grihamedhi. The Grihastha is a person who is situated at home, whose body is situated at home, but whose heart, whose consciousness is at the lotus feet of Krishna. That is a Grihastha. But a Grihamedhi is a person whose entire existence is centered around his Griha, centered around his house. Like we see people are driving, every day they are driving 60, 70, 80 kilometers to go to their work. They leave their home to go to their work, and at the end of the day, they drive another 50 kilometers to come back to their home. And when they are away, their consciousness is actually centered around their home. Whatever they are doing is actually for the sake of their home. They are making money so that they can pay the rent, they can buy the things that they need for the maintenance of their kutumba bharanenava. The family members, those who are staying in that home. So that is a Grihamedhi. Sometimes the Grihamedhis have been exemplified through a cow tied in a peg. A cow is tied in a peg, and the cow is just eating around, roaming around, eating grass, but the peg is the center. He cannot go, he cannot become free from that bondage of the peg. The cow may go 50, 60 yards away from the thing, peg, but ultimately it has to come back to the peg. So the Grihamedhis are those who are leading their lives completely centered around their homes. Apparently both Grihasthas and Grihamedhis are staying at home. Apparently the Grihamedhis also may appear to be like Grihasthas. In India, people think that whoever is married and lives at home is a Grihastha. Nowadays, that's the general understanding. But it's a total misconception. The Grihasthas are very rare, especially in this age of Kali. Because the Grihasthas, although they are situated at home, situated in their household, but they are not actually in their household. Their heart is at the lotus feet of Krishna. So, that is how a devotee of the Lord leads his life. And one very important point has been made here, that those who are above the karmis, that is the gyanis, yogis and devotees, are strictly prohibited from sex indulgence. Those who want to make spiritual advancement, they should completely dedicate themselves in rendering devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And here, Prabhupada is pointing out that above the karmis are the gyanis, above the gyanis are the yogis, and above the yogis are the devotees. So, those who want to make spiritual advancement, like the first stage is actually the platform of a jnani. So when one takes to spiritual life and he he tries to make spiritual advancement by following different processes of jnana. Jnana actually basically consists of meditation. The platform of jnana is centered around meditation. Probing into one's heart in order to understand the spiritual reality. That is the process of jnana. The spiritual reality is not outside. The outside is the material nature, but the spiritual nature is within. In order to understand the spiritual nature, we have to go within. And this process is called jnana. And yoga is the ultimate platform of jnana. The process of Ashtanga Yoga is the ultimate platform of jnana, because of six branches of philosophy, the jnana covers four branches. Like there are six branches of philosophy known as Purva-Mimamsa, Vaisheshika, Shankha, Naya, Vaisheshika, Shankha and Yoga. Now these four branches, Naya, Vaisheshika, Shankha and Yoga, cover the jnana platform. Of the three, karma, jnana and upasana, karma kanda, jnana kanda and upasana kanda, the karma kanda is covered in Purva Mimamsa, the preliminary conclusion. The jnana kanda is covered through Naya, Vaisheshika, Shankha and Yoga. And then Upasana Kanda is covered by Uttar Mimamsa, or final conclusion. The final conclusion is Krishna is God and every living entity is part and parcel. Therefore, every living entity must become engaged in Krishna's service. And to become engaged in Krishna's service in our trying to please Krishna is upasana. Now, of these four branches of philosophy that covers the jnana kanda, the final is yoga, and the ultimate achievement of this yoga or ashtanga yoga is samadhi. The samadhi is perception of the Supreme Lord in the heart. When one perceives, when one completely withdraws his consciousness within and probes in the depth of his heart, then by the mercy of the Lord, he may see the Lord in the heart as the super soul. And that perception of the Lord in the heart is called samadhi. And when one attains samadhi, when one perceives Krishna as the super soul in the heart, then recognizing the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in the light of that, perceiving or recognizing oneself as a very, very minute living entity, minute part and parcel, a living entity surrenders, the living entity spontaneously surrenders himself unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that surrender is the beginning of devotion. That surrender is called Sharanagati. So when one becomes surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, after recognizing the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then only he becomes qualified to become engaged in devotional service. So Prabhupada is pointing out that those who are aspiring for spiritual life, and those who are above the karmic platform, that is in the platform of jnana and platform of yoga and platform of devotion, they must abstain from sex life. That is, their indulgence in household life is simply to procreate and nothing else. And Srila Prabhupada has pointed out that spiritual life is actually based on celibacy. And Prabhupada very proudly announced often that his householders, disciples, are also brahmacharis. They're celibates. When a person, when the householders indulge in for the sake of procreation, then that is spiritual life, that is dharma. And in that platform, even the householders are brahmacharis, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur once mentioned that that kind of householders are worshipable even by the sannyasis. Those householders, those who are situated in brahmachari life, in spite of being a householder, they are worshipable even by the sannyasis. So that is the difference between the materialistic and spiritual life. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anyone have any comment? Question?
Yes.
Vishnu Dada Prabhu.
You mentioning about defending and that devotees will defend not on their own behalf but on behalf of Krishna and devotees. So in there were some incidents in California and some people were accused of those things. And apparently, well, the one view was that one person who was living in West Virginia was attacked by a person. So, in retaliation, there was some defending going on. But if that were the case, would it be sanctioned? Mm. Do you understand the question? Mm. I'm not making the end. So.
Yeah. There are ways to defend also. When we are in a society where there is law, then it is better to defend through. When the state laws are there, then it's better to take shelter of the law in order to defend, instead of taking the law in our own hands. And another very important consideration is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically pointed out that in this age, devotees should not take up weapons. Because this age is so chaotic, if the devotees take up weapons, they'll be, the whole movement will be destroyed. First of all, Mahaprabhu made this process of Krishna consciousness very easily available to anyone and everyone. And many people actually, those who are not in a very advanced platform, may get passionate and take up weapon and do some improper, get involved in some improper activities. And the whole movement will be branded for one man's misdeed. Therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very emphatically pointed out that in this age one should not take weapons. He himself didn't come with a weapon. His weapon is actually the Harinam. His weapon is love. And with that weapon he is defeating the demons. Therefore we should be very careful that when we think of defending, better to approach the legal structure to defend. Or there are mechanisms for defense, like the police is there and other systems are there. And better to approach them for defending instead of we picking up guns and trying to defend, although trying to defend the devotees.
I'm not disagreeing, but someone may say, you said it was the but when Jagai, Malai, they were harassing the Kanana Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya came with a weapon, and was ready to kill him.
Right.
And he didn't go to the authorities.
And that is actually the example how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphatically pointed out that one should not use weapon in this age. You see, yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually invoked Sudarshan Chakra to come. And Sudarshan Chakra came. It was, shining in his forefinger. And Mahaprabhu was just about to release. But then Nityananda Prabhu fell at his feet and stopped, please, kill the demons in their hearts with your love. Balaram?
We see sometimes that we ask people to chant, especially when they say, well, we often chant loudly, and they will say, well, I'm internally, I'm doing it for 24 hours. So before you mentioned that, especially the Vyanis, they put a lot of emphasis to do the things inside, but actually I don't see that we put any emphasis on doing things inside, but we make no
Before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, the spiritual progress was in an ascending way. The spiritual life was actually in an ascending order. Like one had to gradually get elevated. Therefore, there was the Karmakanda. Then transcending Karmakanda, one would come to Gyanakanda. And then transcending Gyanakanda, one would come to devotional service. Right? But in this age, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the mercy has come down in a descending order. Like, we are not separately endeavoring for our spiritual advancement. All we are doing is just accept Mahaprabhu's mercy. Mahaprabhu's mercy has come down and we can just accept it and make spiritual advancement. So when it is in an ascending order, then yes, one first withdraw himself. And then after withdrawing himself completely, and when one perceives the Supreme Lord in the heart through meditation, then he would become engaged in devotional service. Right? Like first he would withdraw his consciousness completely within, stopping the activities of his senses and body and mind. But then, after attaining perfection through samadhi, when one became engaged in devotion service, then again he would use the body and mind and senses in Krishna service. Right? So, now in India people have gross misconceptions. Like, there is a saying that little learning is a dangerous thing. And that applies very perfectly to Indian condition today. They know a little bit, but they think they know everything. They often, what to speak of others, even I thought the same way. Like when I met the devotees first, I thought that, these are Americans, how much do they know about? And I am Indian, so I know more than them. And I think that's a very natural misconception. But if they became humble, and if they asked the devotees what they are actually doing, what is there that made them give up everything and embrace this process of Krishna consciousness, then they would benefit enormously. Now, although they say they're chanting 24 hours inwardly, but that is the most elevated platform. Who can chant 24 hours? Right? A person who is in the most elevated platform, only he can chant like that, 24 hours within. Actually, chanting in the mind, mental chanting, there are different types of chanting. There is Kirtan, Upangshu, and Manashu. Kirtan is loud chanting. Upangshu is the chanting when the person who is chanting, he can hear, but others cannot hear. And the Manashu is mental, where the chanting goes on in the mind. Not only through the sound, through the meaning. Right? Mind registers the meaning. So that is actually the most internal chanting. Actually, when it is in the ascending order, then kirtan is the in English it is loud chanting. That is the, according to ascending order, that is the third class. Then Upangshu is second class. And Manash is first class. Right? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he brought the descending process, the system has become reversed. Right? In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's thing, the Manash will be third class, Upangshu will be second class, and Kirtan is the first class. That this holy name is springing forth from my heart. Ridar huite bol, it's forcing its way from the heart, depth of my heart. And coming onto the tip of my tongue, it starts to dance like the holy name. And while it is making its way to the tip of my tongue, it makes my voice to crack. My voice becomes broken. My whole body starts to tremble. The tears are surging forth from my eyes. So this is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing the chanting of the holy name. Right? We are not making an endeavor to chant. The holy name is becoming manifest on the tip of our tongue. And that is the pure chanting. And so in that case, when one chants loudly, that is even better than when he chants just to hear himself, is not so good. Even better is when he makes others hear. Because by hearing the sound vibration of the holy name, the others will get purified. And even better is when he makes others chant the holy name. And the way one makes other chant the holy name along with him is called Sankirtan. One can try to chant in your mind, but see how long you can chant. It's very difficult because the mind always tends to go here and there. What to speak of fixing the mind to that extent. But although we are not able to chant properly, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy has come down, and that's why we are able to chant congregationally. Yes.
There are some people at present who are more than 100 years of age. They are living now. So some people like Abhimanyu Gatwalgar, Sanjeev Gandhi, and Mahatma Gandhi, and then they died early age, than those people. So, is it
basically
the less
painful,
those who are
living? Yeah. You see, Abhimanyu's case was a little different. Abhimanyu, you see, before Krishna came, Krishna told Brahma to inform the demigods to take birth in the family of Jadus, to participate in his pastimes, to assist him in his pastimes, to kill the demons. Now, when that message was sent to different demigods, different individuals were supposed to take birth. Now, Chandra's son, the moon god, Shomadev, was very attached to his son. And Brahma wanted his son to take birth, to act on the earth planet, to take, to participate in Krishna's pastime. So, so Chandra was very reluctant because he was so attached to his son. He just could not tolerate that separation from him. So then Brahma said, okay, let him go there only for 14 years. So then finally Chandra agreed, Somdev agreed. And so Abhimanyu, and that son is actually was born as Abhimanyu. And the condition was that he would be there on the earth for only for 14 days. And he actually died on the day he was born. And exactly on the day when he became 14 years, he left his body, he left the earth planet and went back to. Now, you see, those who are participating in Krishna's pastimes, their cases are different. Their death is actually their departure from the earth planet to go back to Krishna's eternal pastime. But for ordinary living entities, when they die young, we have to understand that it is as a result of their karma from their past lives or in this lives. Like for example, you know, you mentioned Sanjay Gandhi. Sanjay Gandhi was one of the most sinful persons in this world. You know what Sanjay Gandhi was doing?
Yeah.
He was, what's it called? Like, he was making, you know, in order to stop, in order to, sterilization. He was sterilizing the sadhus in Vrindavan. He was sterilizing the devotees. And Prabhupada said, like, he died like that because of that offense in devotees. Mahatma Gandhi didn't die that young. He must have been about 75 or 80 when he died. So, you know, in this age of Kali, you know, 80 years is a long life. I'll ask Hansudutta. Prabhupada also died at the age of 83. But does it mean that Prabhupada was sinful? No. Like, he lived for many years and, you know, when he accomplished his mission and he went. Yes, Hansudutta.
I wanted to get back to you chanting the holy name because silence are loud. I was over at the Kirtananda's devotee and they did put on the blindfold and that time silent. And it was a nice temple when I was there. So I was a bottle, so what should I do? I tried to sit there and chant just so I could hear, which I never do. I always chant quite loudly. I felt, I can't do this, so I left the room. I was standing there, I felt, I can't, because I wanted to chant so as loud as I usually do, which you can generally hear me in the next room. And when you were speaking, I was thinking of that, and it's like, it's like if someone brings a very delicious plate of prasadam, but you can't eat it, you can only maybe smell it or look at it. It's very frustrating.
Mm.
And it's the fact that Prabhupada always encouraged us to chant very loudly.
Mm.
And I'm glad you broke this point how the process is reversed, that in the ascending process it goes from loud to soft and then silently, and in our process it goes the opposite.
Mm.
Because it is, and then the same day, later, maybe half an hour later, we get your time. And they have a little program they do every morning after everything. They sit down and they thank Krishna for their various, whatever they're feeling, realization. One boy said, he said, I'm so glad Krishna allowed us to do come and have this kirtan. He said, I haven't had a kirtan and felt so blissful like this in a year or something. He was so little. So it is a fact that people also who don't know the Krishna conscious movement, but when they see a group of devotees coming, they become so happy.
Mm.
They become happy, they begin to smile and they laugh and whatever, but they become so happy. And if the devotees become silent, like Buddhists do it, and sometimes they're just coming down the street. What?
Nothing.
Zero.
But what I wanted to ask you was that you were mentioning about defending. In that connection, you know, when they had that problem in Mayapur and in Bhavananda, he took up a weapon. And I think Prabhupada, he thought that was the right thing to do.
Well, I mean, after it happened, then Prabhupada said, okay, he did the right thing.
But it might have been better if it were resolved in another way.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. Because, you know, like, you can well imagine, you know, like in this age of Kali, if you take a gun, they'll come with ballistic missiles, right? Is Vishnu another film?
You're saying about 100 years since there was some lady that it was in the news that she just had her 100th birthday centenarian. And they asked her what she would like for her birthday present to relatives of their, you know, the TV family. What would she like? And she said she wanted some naked dancer man to come. She's sorry. But how about that?
No, the thing is that, you see, like, sin, you know, there are different degrees of sin, right? Maybe you'll find that she was a vegetarian, you know, or she was a teetotaler. You know, like, you know, if one just takes vegetables, I mean, if one just abstains from eating meat, if I just abstain from, you know, that sinful activity of killing cows, you know, I'm sure the duration of life would increase considerably. And it is proven, like nowadays people are becoming vegetarian because they're seeing that, you know, by becoming vegetarians, they're actually, their health improves. And so you see, like, he, maybe this person, that person was, you know, less sinful, I mean, relatively lesser sinful. But you see, like, she had these, you know, other sinful activities. I mean, one cannot become completely free from sinful activities unless and until one becomes a devotee. And then for a devotee, you know, he's just surrendered to Krishna and whatever happens to him. You know, if a devotee dies young, then we have to understand that, I mean, Krishna just sent him to this earth to accomplish some mission, and then, you know, Krishna took him back. Like many, many saintly people die quite young. I mean, they leave this planet quite young. Does it mean that they're sent, they are sinful? No.
No. Because the sinful activities one died immediately now. So
No, that's what I was saying. That was just mentioned. Like, the, for the Lord himself and his devotees, they are not under the rules or regulations of this nature. They are not subject to the laws of this nature. They are transcendental to the laws of this nature. And for them, you know, when they, you know, leave this planet early or late, doesn't really matter.
I was on Sankirtan book distribution, and sometimes you meet a real nice person, they take maybe a couple of books, and you really feel very, very grateful that they give you a nice donation. So I turned to my Sankirtan part-time time. When they're actually feeling the bliss that I'm feeling, because they're also participating in the exchange. Mm-hmm. I wonder how does that actually work?
Yeah. You see, they actually become subject to the bliss that you are feeling also. But they may not register it right away. Right? It's like, for example, you know, like you are, as Hansudo was saying, like, say you have a nice plate of prasad. Say you have a nice plate of prasad. You are enjoying the prasad. And you want to offer it, you want to share it with somebody else also. So he is eating. He also is eating with you, the same plate of prasad. But you see that his, you know, his taste glands have gone dead. Right. So although he is eating it, he won't register the taste of the food, delicious food. Right? But when it goes into the stomach, that food will nourish his body the same way that food is going to nourish your body. Although he hasn't been able to register the taste of it through his tongue, because his taste glands have gone dead. Taste buds have gone dead. So with most of the materialistic people, you know, they do not have the perception to register the joy of Krishna consciousness. Their perceptions, their senses have become so blunt, you know, due to gross materialistic indulgences, that they cannot appreciate the joy of Krishna consciousness. You see, the holy name is eternal. What Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did is he brought this eternal holy name onto this earth planet for anyone and everyone. He distributed it without any restriction. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. It's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu invented the holy name. The holy name existed before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance on this earth planet. And some people on this planet were chanting the holy name. They received it. What to speak of now, 500 years ago, even Prahlad Maharaj chanted Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Right? And that was in Satyuga. Haridas Thakur was chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Advaita Acharya Prabhu was chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Hare Krishna Mahamantra is there in the Upanishad. Kalishantra in Upanishad distinctly mentioned Iti Shorashaka Namnam Kali Kamosha Nashana. It was available, but not so broadly available for anyone and everyone. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, it has become very easily available to everybody. And it has become even more easily available after Prabhupada's appearance. Yes.
It's an actor who acts in advertisement of Burger King and Ronald McDonald. Now he realized that, you know, there's a lot of millions and millions sold. He said, I want to sell them. So he changed his life now. Mm-hmm. And he says that Harina, and he is chanting. And I see this in the news, you know, days before yesterday. And he is going to sell, you know, for the cow now. Mm-hmm. And he says he wants to sell. So now, according to what he said, you know, he has to be a lot of team to the people and to the young generation like that. Now he is going to have a chance to realize himself now, you know. And he is better for 10 acres and he's going to be a cow shelter like that. And do you think that's going to be sales for my hand?
Oh yeah, yeah. When one takes shelter of the holy name sincerely, he becomes free from all sin. Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Paritajya, Mamekam Sharanam Braja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papit. From all sins, delivering. So Krishna has given the assurance. So if somebody takes shelter of Krishna, then he will become free from all the sinful reactions. And in this age, Krishna has appeared as the holy name, Kali Kale Namdupi Krishna Avatar. And Chaitanya Charitamrita mentioned, that at Krishna name jato paap hare, kono paapi shaddho nai tato paap hare. The amount of sin that one holy name can eradicate, no sinner has the ability to commit that much sin. Can you imagine the potency of the holy name? One may have been killed billions of cows in his lifetime. But if he just takes shelter of the holy name sincerely, yes, he will become free from all his sins. There is no amount of sin. I mean, the there is nothing that the holy name cannot deliver. And that is just one name of the Lord.
What happens if such a person, simple person, any simple person, who takes off his holy name, and after some time he fails, he falls, and then again he attempts to take off the cross, what is happening?
If a person is sincerely surrendered to Krishna, and if he deviates from the process, or, you know, for the time being, if he withdraws his surrender, Krishna will bring him back. And when Krishna brings him back, you see, he will become situated on the platform. And it's said that the only reason why one cannot come back to Krishna consciousness after deviation is offenses to the devotees. Vaishnava Aparad is if a person did not commit Vaishnava Aparad, then he'll come back. And when one comes back, he'll begin, Rupa Goswami is saying, he'll begin from the point where he ended. Right? So there is no loss or diminution in one's spiritual practice.
And if a person is actually committed Vaishnava Aparad, then how does he come back? Under what circumstances would he be?
That has been described that if one committed Vaishnava Aparad, then he must beg forgiveness from that particular Vaishnava. Like Krishna sent Durvasa back to Ambarish. He said, even I can't do anything to you. You have to go back, and if he forgives you, then only you'll be saved. Mm-hmm. And the Vaishnavas are so merciful that as soon as one approaches him, begging him forgiveness, then he will say that, no, there is no offense. And he'll embrace him. So that's how wonderful the Vaishnava world is.
How would a devotee know, in Ambarish's case, he went all the way to see Lord Vishnu, but he's very fortunate in the first. How would an ordinary devotee know? How would he ascertain that?
Ascertain what?
Ascertain about his Vaishnava Aparad and how to...
First of all, one should be very careful not to commit Vaishnava Aparad to begin with. And then he can, at least the conscious offenses that he made, you know, whenever he feels that, you know, that there has been some conscious, best is to just approach the person and beg forgiveness. Yeah. You know, because on the material platform we are offensive. So, we should be, if we become conscious, there are two kinds of offenses, conscious offenses and unconscious offenses. Unconscious offenses we cannot do very much about, but conscious offenses we can. And the another consideration is that if one commits aparad to a Vaishnava, but if he is sheltered by a more powerful Vaishnava, then that offense will not fructify. If one commits offense to a Vaishnava for the sake of his service to a more advanced Vaishnava, then these offenses will be nullified, because it was done for the sake of his service to a greater Vaishnava. Like we saw Prabhupada, he begged forgiveness, but at the same time he said, like, for the sake of preaching, I may have committed offenses. Whatever I did was for the sake of preaching. And of course, for a personality like Srila Prabhupada, there is no question of any offense. But still, Prabhupada taught us. And another consideration is, so now that, you know, in Prabhupada's absence, we still have Prabhupada, that is ISKCON. And my observation and my conviction is that even if we are offensive, but if we remain engaged in service of ISKCON, you know, offenses will be nullified. That's why you notice as soon as one steps out of ISKCON, you know, he's in trouble. You know, like so many anarthas, so many difficulties actually overpower him. Because it's just like, you know, giving up the shelter of a boat and jumping into the ocean, which is infested with all kinds of, dangerous animals. Like in no time, those piranhas and sharks will finish him off. Hare Krishna, all glory to Srila Prabhupada.